Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Good morning, everybody, and a very warm welcome to you here in this cold winter month. We start with an article about resilience, followed by a speech from the UN Secretary General. The resilience article is written by Dominique Abdelnour. For several months now, the COVID-19 pandemic has caused major disruption in the world. 4 billion people are confined at home. Half of the globe's economy has stopped. The world scrambles to face the pandemic, astonished and shocked that such disruption can happen so suddenly. Where will this crisis lead? The disruption to the economy strikes the poorest and most vulnerable first. Those who live in crowded small apartments, prisons, migrant camps, or are homeless. Those who deliver goods without protective equipment. Exhausted healthcare workers. Those in retirement homes. People without health insurance. Laid off workers. Millions have no fixed contracts and are brutally dismissed. Workers in Africa, India, low-wage Bangladesh garment workers, undocumented migrants, immigrants I should say, who work in the fields, no longer have any source of livelihood. Our thoughts and love go first to all those who suffer from the most from this crisis.
Faced with weaknesses in the health system and lack of governmental support, citizens are organising themselves to address the problems. In Algeria and Tunisia, volunteers go from door to door to offer food and remind elderly people to take precautions against the virus. Like many artists, the Tunisian dancer Nermeen Safar films herself on video every evening dancing in her living room, trying to lift people's spirits and encourage them to stay home. In Italy, people sing opera from their balcony and play live music. And they say the reason we do it is we feel like we are all one and not separated like before. Music is our breath. In the Bavarian town of Bamberg in Germany, people sing Bella Ciao, an Italian resistance song, from their rooftops. In cities across the world, people cheer for healthcare workers every day at 8 p.m. Everywhere, neighbours help each other and medical knowledge and equipment is shared.
Local authorities, mayors and governors are engaged in solving the immediate concerns of hospitals and the most vulnerable people. They organise volunteers to help in hospitals, help find the basics, masks, ventilators, medical supplies, and prevent the eviction of those who can no longer pay their rent. On an international level, some solidarity is emerging. Albania sends doctors to Italy, and Germany and Switzerland's hospitals take care of French patients that overcrowded French hospitals cannot admit. China shares its experience with France, Italy, Iran. Since December 2019, when China decided to confine people in Wuhan City, the confinement has spread to half the world, with 4 billion people now affected.
Industrial and commercial activities have stopped around the world. The customary wild hustle and bustle engendered by the blind greed of market forces has come to a standstill. This period of forced inactivity in a world dominated by endless and useless activity, overproduction, commercialization, and the accumulation of money comes as an almost incomprehensible shock. The propelling engine of our society is activity, production to fuel the economy. And what do our governments decide when confronted with this pandemic? They decide to stop most of the activity that fuels the economy. They stop the very engine that propels their credo, deciding sometimes reluctantly that saving lives matters more than saving the economy.
One can only remember the advice given to a third-ray aspirant by Alice Bailey. How can he achieve his goal when he is ceaselessly running hither and thither, weaving, manipulating, planning and arranging? He manages to get nowhere. He weaves for the future, forgetting that his tiny bit of weaving is an intrinsic part of a great whole. Cease from thy doing. Walk not on the path until thou hast learnt the art of standing still. So now, humanity is standing still.
In a desperate move to save the stock market, the Dow Jones fluctuated wildly at one point in March 2020 and fell by 37% from the beginning of the year. And the economy, the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank have both injected large amounts of money into the financial system, $750 billion each. The American government has also passed a $2 trillion stimulus package as the USA is facing massive unemployment claims of about 22 million workers in 1 month, a staggering figure.
The over-indebtedness of households, the private sector and states, rich or poor, has become uncontrollable. And to solve the problem, the central banks create more debts at each crisis in a never-ending game. The next step might be the loss of trust in money. All these figures can be compared to the paltry amounts given to hospitals, public services, all sectors which help the population. For example, worldwide education expenditure amounts to $3.74 trillion, 4.4% of world GDP per year. So in a few months, USA and Europe spent about the same amount to save the financial system as the world spends to educate all children for a full year.
Mankind is now facing a microscopic, invisible enemy which is disrupting everything. It brings out the best and the worst, solidarity and fear. The rat race has come to an abrupt halt. The ongoing dismantling of social services since the 1980s, the commercialization of everything, the privatization of state assets, the absurd globalization of most means of production, and the lack of human consideration in decision making is now facing the scrutiny of the people.
Boris Cyrulnik, a French ethnologist, neurologist and psychiatrist, analyzes the COVID-19 crisis and declares that after any catastrophe, the world is never the same again. There is a change in culture. People may turn to mysticism. In Haiti, after the 2010 earthquake, people took to the streets to thank God for opening their eyes to faith. In Europe, after the plague pandemic of 1348 that killed half of the population, people turned to family values, replacing religious pictures by paintings depicting everyday life in their homes. A major historical consequence was the end of serfdom. With fewer people available to work, labourers began to be paid for their work and were no longer sold with the land.
Cyrulnik adds, in 1945, Europe was crushed by massive debts. Only by both earning could a couple survive. Eventually, and as a result, the welfare system was created in many Western countries to deal with unemployment, healthcare, and old age. And he says, after a trauma, one is dazed. To overcome, one struggles to live. Then change occurs. This is resilience. Millions who were out in the streets demanding justice and freedom are now locked up at home in introspective reflection. people are left bare and alone to face the invisible danger. Humanity is facing the consequences of its choices and a great opportunity to change for the better.
Right, and our next piece is titled, We Are Only As Strong As the Weakest. On 31st of March 2020, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres made far-reaching appeals to the world in his opening remarks at a virtual press conference to launch the report on the socio-economic impacts of COVID-19. We present excerpts. The world is facing an unprecedented test, and this is the moment of truth. Hundreds of thousands of people are falling seriously ill from COVID-19, and the disease is spreading exponentially in many places. Societies are in turmoil and economies are in nosedive. We must respond decisively, innovatively, and together to suppress the spread of the virus and address the socio-economic devastation that COVID-19 is causing in all regions. The magnitude of the response must match the scale of the crisis, large scale, coordinated and comprehensive, with country and international responses being guided by the World Health Organization, the WHO, and it must be multilateral, with countries showing solidarity to the most vulnerable communities and nations.
The message of the report we are issuing today is clear. Shared responsibility and global solidarity in response to the impacts of COVID-19. It is a call to action, first for an immediate coordinated health response to suppress transmission and end the pandemic, a response that delivers universal access to treatment and vaccines when they are ready. It is essential that developed countries immediately assist less developed ones to bolster their health systems and their response capacity to stop transmission. Let us remember that we are only as strong as the weakest health system in our interconnected world. Second, we must tackle the devastating social and economic dimensions of this crisis with a focus on those most affected. Women, older persons, youth, low-wage workers, small and medium-sized enterprises, the informal sector and vulnerable groups, especially those in humanitarian and conflict settings. We must see countries not only united to beat the virus, but also to tackle its profound consequences.
What is needed is a large-scale, coordinated and comprehensive multilateral response amounting to at least 10% of global gross domestic product, GDP. Debt alleviation must be a priority, including immediate waivers on interest payments for 2020. The United Nations system is fully mobilized, providing guidance for global efforts, supporting country responses, and placing our supply chains at the world's disposal.
Finally, when we get past this crisis, which we will, we will face a choice. We can go back to the world as it was before, or deal decisively with those issues that make us all unnecessarily vulnerable to crises. The recovery from the COVID-19 crisis must lead to a different economy. Everything we are doing after this crisis must be with a strong focus on building more equal, inclusive and sustainable economies and societies that are more resilient in the face of pandemics, climate change and the many other global challenges we face. What the world needs now is solidarity. With solidarity, we can defeat the virus and build a better world. And that was sourced from the United Nations website.
On 23rd of March 2020, at the United Nations headquarters in New York, Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed for a global ceasefire. Our world faces a common enemy, COVID-19. The virus does not care about nationality or ethnicity, faction or faith. It attacks all, relentlessly. Meanwhile, armed conflict rages on around the world. The most vulnerable, women and children, people with disabilities, the marginalized and the displaced, pay the highest price. They are also at the highest risk of suffering devastating losses from COVID-19.
Let's not forget that in war-ravaged countries, health systems have collapsed. Health professionals, already few in number, have often been targeted. Refugees and others displaced by violent conflict are doubly vulnerable. The fury of the virus illustrates the folly of war. That is why today I am calling for an immediate global ceasefire in all corners of the world. It is time to put armed conflict on lockdown and focus together on the true fight of our lives. To warring parties, I say, pull back from hostilities, put aside mistrust and animosity, silence the guns, stop the artillery, end the airstrikes. This is crucial to help create corridors for life-saving aid, to open precious windows for diplomacy, to bring hope to places among the most vulnerable to COVID-19.
Let us take inspiration from coalitions and dialogue slowly taking place, I should say taking shape, among rival parties to enable joint approaches to COVID-19. But we need much more. End the sickness of war and fight the disease that is ravaging our world. It starts by stopping the fighting everywhere, now. That is what our human family needs, now more than ever.
Now we would like to read to you an article from Benjamin Creme's master, and that was given to him during a public lecture in London some years ago. And the title of the article is The Ending of War. When the time comes to count the cost, men will be amazed at and ashamed of the waste of war. More than any other activity of men, war eats greedily into resources and lives. Nothing is spared in the effort to overcome the enemy. Everything is sacrificed to the attainment of victory. Thus has man waged relentless strife against his neighbour, and not always in self-defence. As often as not, war has been used for the expansion of territory, the accumulation of plunder, or, most abhorrently, the capture of slaves. The spoils of war is a phrase used lightly to describe the underlying purpose of most wars. Today, we have reached a time when men must take seriously the task of ending war. Men must understand that there is no problem or situation which needs war to solve or cure. This being so, the nations must act together and end forever that destructive aptitude of men.
Should they fail to do so, they threaten the very existence of the race. Peace is no longer an option for men. They have now in their hands the deadliest weapon of all time, which, if used in major war, would desecrate the planet and leave it lifeless for aeons of time. Why then court such disaster, such an end? Maitreya, you may be sure, will speak thus on his emergence. He will show men that small wars can lead to terrible consequences and set men on the slippery slope of self-destruction. He will counsel gravely and turn men from the unthinkable. Be vigilant, but not afraid. Trust Maitreya to wisely guide the actions of men. Play your part in the task of educating your brothers and sisters, and so make lighter his burden. Tell all who will listen that the expected one is here, ready to begin openly his mission, that he relies on the men and women of goodwill to work with him for peace and justice, freedom and love. Tell them this. Tell them that Maitreya has a simple answer for the world's woes, that sharing will engender the trust that will open the door and the hearts of men to blessed peace. Then will you see the flowering of the human spirit in brotherhood and cooperation. Then will the problems and blockages melt away, overcoming and overflowing goodwill. Thus will it be, and thus shall we witness the end of the abomination of war. Such is Maitreya's purpose, and firm is his will for its accomplishment. And that was in March 2006.
Well, that's the end of our program. Thank you very much for listening in. If you'd like more information, we encourage you to check out the website, share-international.org. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, our email address is sharenz@yahoo.com. Love and blessings to you all.